past few weeks, unfortunately, we've been missing a few sessions here and there. Last week, first, I forgot it was Rebbe Tevis. Then, I didn't realize he'd all be davening Minstah 1:10 or whatever. But let's get back on track, all right? Every Tuesday, 1:30 to 2:30, we're here. So somebody stopped me at around 2 o'clock. So it's like 2. Make it, that's now around 27 of. Stopped me at 5 after 2. So I can remember to say something about the assignment. Rather than, I'm not going to say it now because people will come late and I'll repeat myself. So at 2:05, stop me and we'll talk about the assignment. Once again, at the risk of repeating myself over and over again, we're looking at what you might consider four dimensions of Jewish history, 1492 to 1992. And the four dimensions are Yisrael ben Ha'amim, Galus and Geula, the Torah as a force in history, and the social and economic conditions of Am Yisrael in these times. And so we began in 1492, and we stressed some of the terrible social, economic, political conditions. We stressed the focus, the focal place of Shulchan Aruch and other Gedolei Yisrael as forces in history. The last time we were here, we discussed the middle and late 1600s, especially Zeros Tach Batat in Poland and Western, what is today? I don't know, what it is today? Well, it's today, I guess, Russia and the Ukraine. And the horrible pogroms, the Khmelnytsky being the leader of those pogroms, and the amount of political anarchy that caused. Because Am Yisrael was beginning by the 1640s to become centralized in many ways. Jews were beginning to become centered around various cities in Eastern Europe. The Torah was becoming, Poland was becoming the Makom Torah for our people. Gedolei Yisrael at the time included the major Mefarshei HaShulchan Aruch, the Marsha, the Maram, etc. And then around this time you have the terrible pogroms of 1648, 1649, which were devastating. Were devastating, of course, physically. The estimates of how many Jews were actually killed vary, but there were certainly numbers in the tens of thousands. And the whole atmosphere was one of great national depression, and depression in the mental sense. There was a lot of yeush, a lot of despair, and this seemed to have been one major push toward leaving Am Yisrael very vulnerable to falling for a false Mashiach. And sure enough, one came along, and that was Shabtai Tzvi, and he spoke about Shabtai Tzvi as a false Mashiach, and how he converted to Islam under threat of death, and how this was a tremendous disappointment to Am Yisrael. And yet, Shabtai Tzvi, we cannot understand him as being just a charlatan, just a faker. He had something to offer in the way of an ideology, because he was able to fool many Gedolei Yisrael, and almost fool some of the major Gedolei Yisrael, especially the Taz, who was the Gadol HaDor at that time, and who sent his son or son-in-law to inquire about Shabtai Tzvi. So you see that he was considering it too. Then, of course, if there he was proved to have been a fake, to say the least, not just a fake, but a mumar, he, Gedolei Yisrael withdrew very sharply from Shabtai Tzvi. I try to emphasize last time we met too, is that Shabtai, besides the political messianic movement that Shabtai Tzvi represented, which of course came to nothing, worse than nothing, became this horrible disappointment. But he had a philosophy, an ideology, which was very heavily influenced by Kabbalah. And that philosophy or ideology remained after his death. So that there was what in English is called Sabbateanism, or Shabsaut in Hebrew, became a way of thinking. And there was Sfarim, as I mentioned, written long, long after Shabtai Tzvi was off the scene personally, Sfarim written by him. So much so that I remember hearing from Rav Shternel, Zichron Lebracha, who used to be a rav here in Baltimore, that a lot of the libraries in the yeshivas in Europe in the 1920s and 30s needed a special librarian or a special consultant, because often they would buy a lot of old Sfarim. And among the Sfarim were Sfarim that were Shabtai Tzvi-oriented Sfarim, especially Sifrei Kabbalah, and not everybody was a bucky in Sifrei Kabbalah enough to know which ones were kosher and which ones were influenced by Shabtai. So there were special experts in every library who knew these things. And often I also have an interest in old Sfarim, and from time to time you can still come across Sfarim written in the 1700s and even 1800s, which look like Sfarim. I mean, they're old, and they have people letters, and they call Psukim, and Amori Chazal, and Zohars, and they're not the kosher Sfarim. The Sfarim written by people from these kinds of sects or movements that were influenced by Shabtai Tzvi. And there were other false messiah-type movements, not as major as Shabtai Tzvi, but we'll mention along the line here, today or next time, a false messiah movement led by a man named Yaakov Frank, and the Frankistin, the Frankists, who followed in his false Mashiach movement. But the point I want to mention now is that what this did, because Shabtai Tzvi was such a major disappointment, and because he was not just a faker, he had something to offer, so much so that he had followers for 100 years or more after his death, or at least followers who followed his way of thinking. So this made Am Yisrael, the Gedolei Yisrael, on guard. They made us have our defenses up, to make sure that anything new that came along, especially if it was anything different, a different orientation, a different way of looking at things, became suspect, because, hey, remember, here we go again with another Shabtai Tzvi movement. And therefore the writings of many and the practices of many in the 1700s became very suspect, because especially if they wrote in inyonim like Kabbalah, or if they did certain practices that resembled the kinds of practices that Shabtai Tzvi used to do, people got very suspicious. And this attitude of suspicion, distrust, etc., characterized in many ways the period of time called the 1700s. I'm going to speak today about the Ramchal, Moshe Chaim Lutzato. His life was tragically very affected by this suspicion. Who is this person who is writing such different kinds of Sfarim and doing things a little differently from the usual? It will come into play when we talk a little bit about the Machlokas between Rav Yaakov Emden and Rav Yohanes Neifschitz. Because Rav Yohanes Neifschitz also is doing certain things that caused him to be suspected of being a follower of Shabtai Tzvi. It's also part of what made Hasidus so suspect. And Hasidus began to grow in the 1700s. So I wanted to mention that as background. Also, in the 1700s, really the roots are, of course, in the 1600s, but as far as Am Yisrael is concerned, it's really only in the 1700s that the Enlightenment, meaning the change in European secular Goyish culture toward Enlightenment, toward a different kind of philosophy, toward a different kind of politics, toward a more open way of thinking, towards, from the point of view of the Goyim, a less religious commitment, less attachment to the Church, and a separation of the Goyim from the Church. The whole philosophical, cultural, political movement known as the Enlightenment began to spill over onto and have its influence on Am Yisrael. And the next big topic that we're going to be looking at, and of course it persists to this very day, is the effect of the general culture on Yahadus and the different ways that Yahadus, traditional Yahadus, had and has of reacting and defending against these influences. It was, before the 1700s, the general culture was not a sakana to Yahadus, right? Shach and the Taz and the Magen Avraham and the Mashon and the Maram and the Maharal didn't have to be concerned about too much about the effect of the general culture and philosophy and literature and politics on the Jews, because the Jews lived a very insulated kind of a life and weren't even permitted to permitted by the Goyim to have much to do with the general culture. In the 1700s, this starts to change. So that the general feeling at this time is, number one, suspicion and disillusionment and despair coming out of the whole Shabtai Tzvi incident, number one. Number two, a defensiveness and a disorientation of how do we, as Jews, cope with all that's going around us culturally and politically. The whole world is changing. How do we deal with it? Of course, by the end of the 1700s, these changes were no longer just changes in the books and in the teachings. It became major changes in the political structure because of the French Revolution, which was a major upheaval in all of European political adjustment, because all of Europe changed. And gradually, kings began to be overthrown, democracy became the norm, civil rights became more open, people began to vote, women were given more recognition and power, minorities were given more recognition and power, and all of this can be seen as a result of what started as the philosophical cultural enlightenment. So that now, it's the 1700s, you really see Jewish history begin to change from a pattern that lasted for many hundreds of years. And the pattern has now changed because of this suspicion, disappointment, disillusionment, and the bitter experiences of the Gullus, on the one hand, plus all of the changes that are happening in history in general. Changes in the world, changes represented by democracy, by enlightenment, by the reformation of the church, and things of that nature. And it's at this point that it's, I think, very apropos to speak about the Ramchal. And we're going to base